Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming.
Oh, look, there you go again, putting on that smile again, even though I know you've had a bad day.
Tonight's KVC Arts focuses on a variety of music. Later in the program, we'll have Sahar Kajanori in conversation with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John, Piedmont Blues from North Carolina, performing in the area recently. Rick Dulock speaks with Ryan Lilliengren about the upcoming Christ Fest. That's a two-day World Christian Pop Music Festival. We'll start tonight with Lillian Vasquez in conversation with country star Clay Walker. He also was performing in the area recently and rather enjoys playing in Southern California.
It reminds me a lot of Texas in the sense that there's a lot of country music fans and people that remind me a lot of where I grew up, so it's always fun.
Well, speaking of Texas, I know you've been performing for a few years now. How has the industry changed from the early days in Beaumont, Texas, and breaking into the business now?
Well, everything evolved. You know, whenever I first came on the scene, you know, in the 90s, you know, I was the new flavor, I guess you could say. And I guess what's good stands the test of time. You know, we've been able to maintain being able to go out and do shows and have fans come out and see us. And I'm sure that, you know, the new music that's out now, that's very different than the music when I first came out. The best will survive that. And that's what makes country music or any format strong, having competition and then seeing what's going to stand the test of time. You know, we'll see. But we've made some new music ourselves. And I feel like I've had a really good, I call it a bird's eye view of the industry and able to watch it go through these new changes.
Sure.
And be able to take what I think is still soulful and put new production with it and have it match up, you know, against the stuff that's out on the radio right now. And so we'll see how radio, and not only radio, but see how the country music fan receives it.
Right, got it. You're the oldest of your four siblings. Were you the only one that picked up a guitar, and did you play sports, or was music all the way?
I played sports in junior high and high school, quarterback, and played a little basketball, but football was always my sport. I always played music too. I started playing the guitar when I was about 9. But by the time I was 12, I had really developed a love for guitar and singing. And then when I was 15 years old, I knew that it's what I would pursue the rest of my life. And it was probably, you know, the best decision I could have ever made.
Well, great. Seems to be working for you, obviously.
Galveston, oh Galveston, I still hear your sea winds blowing. I still see her dark eyes glowing. She was 21 when I left Galveston.
With the recent passing of country legend Glen Campbell, did you have a couple of Glen Campbell favorites?
Oh, sure. Probably Galveston, because, you know, I grew up going to Galveston as a kid a lot. It was our beach, you know, that we went to. And then I eventually moved there and lived there for quite a while on the beach. You know, so that song always resonated with me, as well as Rhinestone Cowboy. Glen had this bigger-than-life personality. He was funny, and we golfed together at Pebble Beach, and he was just a really charismatic guy that had done it all. You know, he had starred in movies, he had written soundtracks for movies, he was, of course, you know, a country music superstar, had his own TV show. So Glen was an icon, you know, to all of us that aspire to be in the country music world. I guess he was kind of the male Dolly Parton.
Right, that makes sense. Well, how nice that you had the opportunity to know him and spend time with him. Truly a great loss, not just in the country world, but just in the music world overall.
Absolutely. The last time I saw Glen, I was doing something with the National Final Rodeo. It was a few years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago. And I was singing the anthem at the rodeo, and Glen was going to do a performance. And, you know, the Alzheimer's was public by then. And we spent a few minutes, and he seemed to be intact, you know, have all of his faculties. And we laughed. I was just thinking to myself, man, this, he sure doesn't seem like he has Alzheimer's. This is great. And then, of course, we know the outcome of it.
It's sure.
A wretched disease, but it was a wonderful moment that I had with him, and it was a good way to remember him.
I could make a
be a millionaire in a week or two. I'd be doing what I love and loving what I do if I could make a living out of loving you.
Let me ask about possibly other musical influences who were yours when you were first starting out, or who might be your influences today, although you're probably influencing others at this point.
I guess I'm like a throwback. I love Merle Haggard's voice and Keith Whitley's voice. You know, today when I do sound checks, I sing their songs. Sound checks and some George Strait stuff, too.
Very good.
But George probably influenced me on the love song part, you know, and Haggard and Whitley influenced me on tone and texture of voice, you know, trying to achieve that lower kind of in-between baritone and tenor sound. I think every guy wishes he had a deep voice. He's the ones I know. Some people even smoke cigarettes to make them deep. But that influenced me a lot, and I had a really neat experience. We were doing a show in Ohio, and a guy came through the meet-and-greet line, and he was 23 years old, and he's an aspiring artist, and he actually has a record, and he's working in Nashville. I think his album debuted on the charts in the 60s. But he comes through, and he has a picture with him, and it's a photo of him when he was 4 years old standing in front of an 18-wheeler with my face on it.
Aww.
For our Prime Star satellite tour. His mom or his dad had taken the photo, and he was so humble, and he just showed a lot of humility and was really just ecstatic to meet me, and that really touched me. He told me that I had influenced him more than any other singer, and that Hypnotize the Moon album.
Wow, was, paying it forward, it sounds like.
Yeah, and so that was very touching. And then last year, I was at the ACMs, and Brett Eldridge and Cole Swindell started singing different hits of mine to me. It was
wow.
Really cool. You know, I'm just staring at this thing, and it is. Yeah. And I get it, you know, but I just wasn't ready for it. It shocked me, but I mean, I've done that to other singers, you know, that I was a big fan of, you know,
sure.
Like Alabama, like Randy Owen. He was like, hey, this is where I am in life. It's my turn to get to see this. The seeds I planted are now growing up, and see, it's pretty nice.
Well, I want to ask a kind of a cliche question. Are there one, maybe two songs, I don't want to say favorites, but ones that you enjoy performing for whatever reason?
There's a few songs, you know, in the set list that are vocally, I like to do them because they're challenging and I love the challenge of it. Like the song Fall.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big hit for us. This Woman and This Man, another big ballad that has it.
Right.
But then there's, you know, a song that's not as challenging vocally, but it hits me in the heart every time because it's an autobiography, and that's Live Until I Die.
Right.
And then, you know, probably If I Could Make a Living Out of Loving You, because people sing it so loud back to me.
Right.
But there's no song that I perform live that I don't absolutely love doing. It's just that those four kind of stand out.
Back in the day, you performed a duet with Freddie Fender, which is well-known and lovely. Are there any duets that you would like to perform, and who would they be with?
I think what's missing for me is when I was growing up, my favorite song was Endless Love by Lionel Richie and Diana Ross. And
right.
I can't believe that in my career I've never recorded a duet with a great female singer that had that kind of impact. I want to record a song that has that kind of impact on people as far as love songs go. I guess either, you know, the song hasn't come along. That's one of the things on my bucket list, to record a song with a female with a really awesome voice that I could harmonize on and have something, you know, like Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers had. Or
right,
like,
exactly.
That would be a goal for me.
Or Neil Diamond and Barbara Streisand and one of their songs.
Absolutely.
Yep,
yes.
Okay. Can you share a bit about your nonprofit and your mission to serve those with MS?
Sure. I remember reading this somewhere. I don't know. It's at least, you know, like a proverb. To whom much is given, much is expected. I've always been a giver. I see people live with MS like I do. I've had multiple sclerosis 21 years, and when I was diagnosed, the prognosis was horrific. I was told that I'd be in a wheelchair in 4 years and that I would die within 8 years.
Wow.
And, of course, it terrified me. More than one doctor agreed with that prognosis. I had to work quick and to work smart and to find out all the information I could to try to keep that from happening, if at all possible, and I did. So my goal is to encourage people that fight this battle every day, to give them hope, to educate people, to who've had MS that might not have access to some of the great information that I'm privy to by having great doctors. And I started a charity called Band Against MS. We've worked hard. I'm really proud of the effort that's been able to put forth and to change people's lives and to encourage them, give them hope. And I do about, I guess, 8 or 10 speaking engagements a year. And we have an open mic, and I let people ask anything they want to ask. It doesn't matter. You know, I have no fear of anything is what I'm trying to say. I mean, people ask me a lot of questions about MS that are very personal, and I answer them all.
Wow.
I think it's important. Truth is important, and it's valuable. I'm really proud of our team, the Band Against MS, for what we've been able to get done.
And it seems in reading a little bit about it and how you're attacking it is through diet, exercise, and just living a smarter life?
Yeah, you know, I'm an organic guy now. I do eat meat. I do eat beef, but I grow it myself. You know, it's all grass-fed. We don't have any pesticides or hormones or anything. We're non-GMO, and not that GMOs are bad, but just when you don't know what causes multiple sclerosis, you certainly want to give your body and immune system every possible good outcome. And
right.
So I know that GMOs are important for farmers around America, so I'm not one of these guys to stand up and, you know, I'm not a scientist either, so I can't disparage that. But for me, being organic, I feel like, especially with MS, gives my immune system the best chance.
Well, that's terrific. So is there a new program or new project or album in your very near future, or TV projects? I saw something about the Outdoor Channel and the Food Network, so obviously you got a good-looking face for television. What's next on your bucket list?
Well, we will have some new music coming out this year. I don't know if that'll be an EP or what, but we will have new music out. And when you put new music out, you want to get it out there as much as possible, so people will see me probably a lot on television, as much as our schedule will allow and as much as people will have us. Radio is where we live, and that's important to me as well. So I really appreciate you letting me be on the radio with you today, and very humbled by it.
Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Lillian, and thank you so much for taking the time and getting us on.
KVCR's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Clay Walker. More on Clay at claywalker.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, it's Rick Dulock speaking with Ryan Lilliengren about an upcoming two-day World Christian Pop Music Festival. We'll also have Piedmont Blues and much more with Sahar Kajnori in conversation with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John. I really do want to say that this interview with Clay Walker was conducted on August 14th, when what would become Hurricane Harvey was only something being monitored as a tropical wave. And I chose to keep the conversation about Texas and Galveston and Glenn Campbell's song Galveston in the program. And our hearts and thoughts go to those in the greater Houston area and beyond. KVC Arts continues. This is 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Later in the program, we have music in conversation with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John, North Carolina, Piedmont Blues in the area quite recently. First, we have Rick Dulock. More on an upcoming, very diverse two-day music festival.
The Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange will host a two-day World Music Christian Pop Festival in Garden Grove, Christfest, on September 8th and 9th, with some big names in contemporary and traditional Christian music in the lineups. Ryan Lilliengren is Director of Communications for the Diocese of Orange and joins me today to talk about what you can expect if you attend one or both evenings of Christfest. Thanks, Ryan, for taking the call today.
Of course. So happy to be with you. Thank you.
This two-day festival is not the first you've hosted. Is this something you've been doing every year for some time?
This is actually the second year. So last year we started the festival as part of our 40th anniversary celebration in the Diocese of Orange. And we had about 10,000 people that came to the festival and day of festivities last year. And now we're so excited to be moving into our second year. We had what we thought was a successful community event last year, And now we're hoping it gets bigger with year two.
Very good. And tell us about the grounds, where you are, where the diocese is.
So the Diocese of Orange is actually at the former Crystal Cathedral, which many of your listeners are probably familiar with. Robert Schuller, his ministry in the Hour of Power, was located here for about 50 years. And the Diocese of Orange purchased the facility out of bankruptcy about 4 years ago. And it's 34 acres right in the heart of Orange County in Garden Grove, and uniquely lends itself to a very, very large music festival like we're going to have on September 8th and September 9th.
This is an outdoor venue then?
Yeah, it's going to be outdoors just because of the very large numbers of people. We're expecting probably 6,000 people for each evening of events. So we bring in a huge concert stage and seating and covered seating. Being that it's a Catholic church facility, we'll have a wine and cheese area. We're going to have microbreweries from Orange County on site. We'll have a Peruvian food village and a lot of other neat things to add to the amazing music that will be happening on campus.
Excellent. And the performances will be in multiple languages as well?
Yeah, so our population in Orange County, as well as the Inland Empire, is very diverse. And the largest groups are, you know, English speakers and Spanish speakers. So on Friday evening, we have a completely in Spanish event, and we have Barbara Padilla, who is originally from Mexico, a very amazing vocalist, was actually on America's Got Talent.
Oh, wow.
She's amazing. We also have Mariachi Sol de Mexico, which is arguably the most noteworthy and famous mariachi group in Southern California or in California in general. And then we have Sun by Four out of Puerto Rico. And then we have Siervas, the Seekers from Peru. So there are 11 Catholic nuns that are actually in consideration for a Latin Grammy. We'll be here. We're bringing them up from Peru, and they'll be playing rock music at our event. So they're quite amazing.
11 rockin' nuns.
Rockin' nuns. They are quite impressive. And, you know, they wear traditional habits, and they have, you know, electric cellos, electric guitars, pianos, the whole thing. So they're quite an amazing group. So that's the Friday night. And then the English evening is headlined on Saturday by Mac Powell of Third Day. Third Day is arguably one of the biggest Christian contemporary bands out there, and Mac Powell is the lead singer, so he'll be here. And then we have Ike Nadolo, who's a very famous Catholic performer. Las Siervas will be playing, and we have Shane and Shane, Adam Bitter, and Jimmy Cravity, and Rush of Fools. So we've got a really great lineup of Christian contemporary music, and very much not just only Catholic performers, but very much an ecumenical group, and it's our hope, as it was last year, to draw many different groups of the Christian community and others to the facility to experience amazing music and just join with their community for a great night of fun and faith.
And Las Siervas, they're going to play both nights then?
They are. They're just absolutely so amazing, and they're very interesting and attractive to whatever language you might speak. So they perform primarily in Spanish, but for the first time ever, they're rehearsing some English songs that they'll be playing on Saturday.
Oh, so you'll get to witness the very first time they're doing
the very first time, yes. They're quite amazing. And, you know, the women that are part of this religious order are actually from, I think, 8 different countries. So all over South America, and they even have one sister from South Korea.
Wow. You're listening to KVC Arts. I'm Rick Dulock, and my guest is Ryan Lilliengren with the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange. They're hosting Christ Fest on September 8th and 9th, a 2-day World Christian Music Pop Festival.
I see all the pain in your eyes, and I know all the tears that you've cried. And baby, that kind of man that's gonna leave you here with empty hands. I'm gonna be the one when your hope is gone. I'm never gonna walk away, I won't let go, don't be afraid. Through the hardest times of pain, you'll find I'll carry you.
So you you said a little bit earlier that you're expecting 12,000 people in all, like 6,000 a night or something like that.
We're expecting 6,000 in the evening. So we're, you know, working hard to get the word out and making sure everybody knows about the amazing bands that we have and all the great experiences that are to be had on campus. As I said, this is the second year we've done this. The diocese has never really done a very, very large music festival at this level before we started this last year. So it's always an effort to get the word out and make sure that all the folks in Southern California know that we're doing this and to get them all here for this amazing event.
And how can people find out about tickets? Do you have a website?
Yeah, we do. So ChristFestOC.com is the website for Saturday, ChristFestOC.com. And then for Friday is FestivalDeCristo.com. That's FestivalDeCristo.com. So you go there, a lot of information on the event, when people are playing, but there's also a lot of detailed information on tickets. So I hope folks can make it there and buy their tickets and join us.
I will carry you.
Can you mention again the other vendors and things that will be on the grounds in addition
to the
music?
Yeah, so we're going to, on-site, we have a lot of food, a lot of concessionaires on-site for just sort of general, you know, concert food, but we also have a Peruvian food village. So given that the sisters are from Peru, the Peruvian community across Southern California is very, very excited to have them here. So they've come out in force. A lot of amazing Peruvian restaurants throughout Southern California will be here on-site cooking the food, which I'm sure you've had and I've had. It is amazing. They'll all be here on site. We also have Inca Cola, who is the big cola soft drink company from Peru, will be here with their drinks. Then we also, amazingly, we have 7 or 8 of the largest microbreweries in Orange County are going to be joining, and they'll be here on site. And then we have a number of different vineyards throughout California that'll be here on site as well. So we have a, you know, amazing group of food purveyors that'll be here on site, making sure that it's not just amazing music, but it's really a day-long festival of incredible food, great music, and soft drinks and libations. So it's going to be an end-to-end and amazing evening.
Christ Fest takes place on September 8th and 9th in Garden Grove. It is a 2-day World Christian Music Pop Festival hosted by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Orange. My guest, Ryan Lilliengren, is Director of Communications for the Diocese of Orange. You can find out more about Christ Fest for the Spanish night, Friday night, September 8th, festivaldecristo.com, or for Saturday night tickets and information, christfestoc.com. Ryan, thank you very much for speaking with me today. I really appreciate it.
So wonderful to chat with you, and I hope to see you on September 8th and 9th, and I hope to see a lot of your listeners there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to KVCR's Rick Dulock. You're listening to KVCR's 91.9 KVCR. As KVCR's continues, we have the Piedmont Blues and much more with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John. You're listening to KVCR's on 91.9 KVCR. Online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Up next, we have the Piedmont Blues, a welded together homemade guitar and more with Sahar Kajanori in conversation with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John. And the first order of business, just where did those names come from?
Headed down to New Orleans, where they tell me it's a quaint little town. When I got on down to New Orleans, there was pretty girls from all around.
When I was around the age of 19, had a friend of the family. I was in the local newspaper, and at that time, the community knew my dad as John, Big John, and I was Little John. Well, I think that there was a rapper or something named Little John, you know, L-I-L John. So my friend, he was like, you know, I think that that's a rapper. Let's come up with another name. I was in the newspaper, and he saw the article and everything about Little John and all that. So he did write a song. Said, like, I saw Little John in the paper today or whatever. So he came over and he said, hey man, we need a name. We sat down and wrote my name out. He switches my first name and my middle name. And out of the blue, Lakota John comes out. Like, it's crazy. I was like, Marty, how did you think of that? He's like, I don't know. But it's so simple, but still it's catchy.
And Sweet Papa John.
We always played music together as a family, sitting around the living room. So when Lakota got the invitation to come on board, actually through Poudre Fay, she saw a video when Lakota was a kid in a talent show somewhere. Someone posted it up on YouTube, and she was living in Seattle at the time, and she says, wow, this is beautiful. A kid's into the blues. She said, I'm with a record label in North Carolina. When I get back home, I am going to introduce you to him. And that's what she done. And then from there on out, they started booking Lakota throughout North Carolina, festivals and private parties, house concerts and whatever. The president, the founder of the company, said, hey, you know what? He's too young to travel by himself. He was 12 at the time. He said, do you do anything musically as a family? I said, we always have. He said, well, just take it on the road. Y'all will be together. You can drive him around. And he said, but, you know, you need to come up with a name. I said, well, what about Lakota John and Ken? You know, we're the Ken folks. He said, man, that's perfect. That works. But you need a name, and you need a name. So Layla's Miss Layla, and that's my daughter, and Mama T, or I call her Miss Gorgeous.
So how did Sweet Papa come up?
And then they said, well, what about you? I don't know. You can call me anything as long as you call me for dinner. Sweet Papa.
Well, tell them about John. The John thing.
Oh, yeah, so anyway, when Lakota was born, my wife would say, hey, John. And we'd both say, what? So she said, look, we need to figure this out.
Regroup
so
here.
She called him brother and called me Papa, and that's where it kind of come from, Sweet Papa John. Johnny Winter, actually, he had a song called Sweet Papa John, and I kind of borrowed it from there.
I like that. And it's catchy.
Yeah, you know? Catchy.
And speaking of Lakota John, tell me a little bit about your background, about your heritage.
Yes, so I am Lakota Oglala Sioux. My great-grandfather, all of his family are from South Dakota Pine Ridge Reservation. Well, he was in the military and was stationed in North Carolina. So he met my great-grandmother, which is Lumbee. So they got together, made a family, and here I am. So, but the name, along with the music and the heritage and all of that, I was not gifted a name in Sioux, in Lakota. So my mother named me after the tribe. So that's how I came, you know, about John Lakota Locklear and then on to Lakota John. But my family's originally from South Dakota.
And Sweet Papa John?
My dad was from the Pembroke, North Carolina area. They typically farmed tobacco, corn, cotton. So back in the early 50s, he says, you know, I heard that there was work up north. I'm going to travel and look for factory work, as a lot of other native folks did at the time. There was a big movement. They went to Detroit, New York City, Philadelphia, Baltimore, anywhere where there was factory work. They now became the urban Indians. They were up there working, surviving, making a lot more money than they were farming. So my dad moved to the area and stayed there for 30 years, met my mom and started a family. And my mother's mother was a piano player. She actually played in speakeasies back in the 20s. Her and her brothers had a family band. They played in all of those establishments. And I was blessed with hearing quite a bit of different genres of music. Over at her house, I'd hear the jazz and the blues, and my brother lived with her. He was into the electric blues with Muddy Waters and John Lee Hooker, and he turned me on to a lot of the artists. And then when I got home, my dad was listening to bluegrass and southern gospel and classic country, and my mother was into country. And at school, the kids were into disco. Half of them were disco, the other half were hard rock, Alice Cooper, AC/DC, and the headbanging stuff. And so I got a wide variety. The only thing I wasn't exposed to, although I was at the time and didn't know it, was the classical music, and that was on the cartoons. A lot of the classical music was on the cartoons. So later in life, when I met my girlfriend, is now my wife, she loved classical music. And I said, oh, I remember that song. It's on a cartoon. It's on Bugs Bunny so-and-so. She said, that's Beethoven, or that's, okay, well. So I was fortunate to be exposed to many genres of music, and I like quite a bit of stuff. Lakota and Layla listened to my library of music and picked up
so
on
much.
It.
So much. crazy.
And dug it. And then they started looking at the people like they were listening to Allman Brothers or Lynyrd Skynyrd. And then they started digging deeper and said, well, let's see where these guys learned it from. So they got to the Blues Masters and so forth.
Wow, so you had this entire world of music at your disposal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's where you grabbed inspiration.
Absolutely, yeah, from a young age. I mean, from around 6-7 years old.
So you come from a musical family.
Yes, I would say so.
What's the first instrument you picked up? And I'm going to guess.
Okay.
Was it the harmonica?
It was the harmonica, yes. So yeah, my dad played harmonica. I was around that. And I listened to like Taj Mahal and, you know, people like that, great harmonica players. So I picked that up. I started out on that. My dad gave me a harmonica and said, here, try this out. Picked up on the harmonica and I don't know, somewhere along the way, I mean, I was still interested in it, but not as much as guitar as by looking at it. You know, I didn't pick up the guitar, but just by looking at it, I said, okay, I'd like to try that. So the harmonica kind of went in the background for a little bit. And my parents bought my sister a guitar, and she had her head on violin. She wanted to play fiddle. Her guitar sat in the corner, and me being nosy, I go and see what that's about. So I go check out the guitar. You know, I know nothing about it. So I guess my parents saw that I was very interested in the guitar or whatever. I picked it up, and I think they got me a ukulele, and they tuned it in an open tuning because I didn't know what I was doing, and it sounds good. So I'm just sitting here playing an open chord, you know, I don't know anything. I guess around the age of 8, maybe 9 years old, I started getting lessons from a professor out at the college in my town, UNC Pembroke. I actually played a couple of harmonica gigs with him, so we were jamming and stuff. Also, I was getting lessons from him. And I went to him a couple of times, and he taught me some chords and stuff, and that's when, along with that, plus the harmonica, plus the ukulele, plus the influence from the music and stuff, I just took off. And I started listening and just digging deeper about who did they learn from and who did they learn from. And that's pretty much it about the whole start of it all. So.
And because you're from North Carolina, the demographic, is that, would you say that's what kind of inspired your love and interest in ragtime and blues?
Absolutely, absolutely. So in the region in which we live, it's considered the Piedmont region, the southeastern region from like maybe Georgia, South Carolina, up to Virginia, West Virginia area. This is considered the Piedmont, and this style of music that I play, it was very influenced by definitely piano players. You know, because you can hear it, you know, and people like Jelly Roll Morton, Scott Joplin, Fats Waller, you know, you hear this left hand stride type playing.
Keeping the rhythm up.
Yeah, keeping the rhythm, keeping the whole bass while the right hand is just dancing, you know, grooving. So these maybe country folks or, you know, people that really didn't have a lot of money to maybe afford a piano or to go somewhere and maybe afford to hear someone and didn't have the means or whatever, they got together and made their own instruments up. And so you hear all of these stringed instruments that they make because, you know, they couldn't afford an instrument or this and that. So all of them get together and you get, you know, jugs that had whatever in it. You had jug bands, then you had maybe a tambourine or some type of percussion instrument, along with, you know, maybe some twine or some strings or something that they found or they put together in. And, you know, there you go. Then you have these string groups, you know, jug band type string groups from the early 1900s that were influenced by, you know, piano playing and this whole syncopated type rhythmic patterns and songs and just, and everything come together. So I can definitely, from the Piedmont region, you can hear the correlation between this ragtime stride playing and the string band stuff. And that's where you hear people like Blind Boy Fuller, Willie McTell, Reverend Gary Davis, and all of these guys that were influential in all of this music.
That's Sahar Khachanori in conversation with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org.
You start to perform your voice and the guitar and the harmonica together, it just lights up the room. I mean, it's a big sound, like
right.
Boom. And that big sound also comes from that guitar.
Right.
Can you describe to me what you were playing this?
Yes, so today I was playing a National steel guitar. Oftentimes it's referred to as a dobro, but that is not accurate. It's a resonator. And this type of music was played on these style of guitars. This guitar was made in 1927 or designed by the Dopierre brothers. And it's a very cool instrument. Inside you have a cone, and the strings run across the bridge and apply pressure to the cone. And this is where you get this just raw, raspy sound. You know, people like Blind Boy Fuller played this type of music because guitar was invented to compete with all of the street noise and everything that was going on in the street during this era.
Big bands also.
Yeah. Big bands, you know, it had to compete with horns. It had to compete with wagons and piano as well. So they put their heads together and they said, hey, we need to come up with something that can compete here. Because a regular wood body guitar cannot do it. The resonators, they're significantly louder than a regular guitar. So
this was back also before amplifiers hit the scene really big, and a lot of places that the musicians were playing, there was no electric available. If there was electric guitars, so these national guitars would cut through the noise, cut through the mix, and very loud instruments.
So then you have people like Blind Boy Fuller playing this type of music, and it's out front. Just like you mentioned, this music makes people dance. You can't help but groove.
Yeah, a lot of, back in the day, you had a lot of, you know, house parties, juke joints, and they would hire one guy playing this Piedmont blues. If you would close your eyes and listen, it sounded like two or more instruments going on, because he could carry the rhythm and the melody and sing and blow harmonica if he had a rack around his neck with a harp in it or a kazoo. And one guy could entertain a crowd of people with a big sound.
Earlier, you and I had a conversation about Lakota's first steel guitar. Can you tell me more about that?
So, from the first time he heard a national guitar, he says, man, I'd love to find one of those. I said, well, Pap, let me tell you, they're pricey, you know. But what we can try to do is make one. So, that's what we've done. We got sheet metal and made a plywood form, and we cut the pieces out and hammered them around, shaped the body of the guitar, welded it together, and then borrowed a donor neck off of a overseas Stratocaster design guitar. And about the time we got it together and he started playing it, it was super heavy. We should have made it out of a little bit thinner gauge material, but, you know, we didn't know, experimenting. About the time we got it together and he was playing it, we found a deal on a national guitar. It was a new guitar, but it was old stock. A guy had it in a music store, and it didn't sell for 5 years. It closed 5 years prior, and he had a couple instruments left, and he made it really possible to give us a good deal on this instrument. After he saw a clip on Lakota playing as a kid, he said, I'm going to make this happen for you.
Yeah.
And he did.
It's a gorgeous guitar.
Thank you. Thank you.
And does your guitar have a name?
My guitar does not have a name.
What?
Oh my God. No, it does not have a name. I'm still thinking about that because I have like 12 or 13 of them. But with the style of music that I play, it just seems like my go-to. Just the connection with it that I have. But no, it does not have a name.
It's always, you know, what are you playing it? If it's electric gigs, well, I'm going to take the Strat. Or I'll take the Strat and take the National. And
yeah, so they're more like, you know, I refer to them as what they really are, not as, you know, I'm going to take Britney today, or, you know, nothing like that. No, I don't
know. I like that was your go-to.
Yeah.
So who would you say your current influences are?
Current influences as of now?
Absolutely.
Oh, my. One, my number one, is Kerry Morin, a shredder, a monster. He's also a Piedmont blues guitar player, but he plays in open tuning. By the way, that is not a crutch for him. That does not mean that it's easier, because he really sounds like two instruments, two guitars playing. I mean, it's mind-blowing. And by the way, it's Carymorin.
Look him up. He's a monster. Guy's got a great voice. He's a native out of Fort Collins. He's originally from Montana. I think his mom may be Crow and his dad is Lakota. And he'll tell you, I guess it makes him Lakrota.
So.
But he's a phenomenal musician.
As well as him, Puta Faye, she's incredible. Taj, I love other types of music too. But as far as influence on what I do, Tony Raimondo, this is an influence. He's a musician, great drummer, an all-around awesome guy, and he makes amplifiers, guitar amps. And,
boutique tube amplifiers from scratch.
Actually, rewind here to when I was younger, around the age of 12, 13, 14, he built me a hand-wired boutique amp from scratch. He did the wood and everything for it. And he's also an influence today of all of my music and everything. And we play with him when we do some electric blues stuff. Some Stevie Ray Vaughan stuff, some Jimi Hendrix, some Dilbert McClinton, all my brothers, stuff like that. But awesome work. It's incredible. But they're called a Big T Amps. I think he's on Facebook. And I used to play through a Little Blues Junior. I loved pedals. I don't know why, I just did at the time. And I had like a delay pedal or whatever, but I played this amp and I was floored. I no longer needed pedals, took them all away. And still, till this day, I do not play with any pedals. No pedals.
You don't need it.
No, not around my amp.
Plug right into the amp.
Yeah.
And so Big T amps and they're hand wired.
Georgia rag, yeah, I'm crazy about the Georgia rag. You know that rag, baby, that Georgia rag. I didn't yell and in the street and saw the boys and girls to me. Cause you're doing that rag, baby, that Georgia rag.
You know your sound. Was sound engineering something that you had studied?
No, by no means. It's just trial and error and listening to people play and just trying to figure out why this sounds different than that or why it sounds buttery or more pleasing to my ear. Not that it's right or wrong, just certain sounds you kind of gravitate to. And that amp that he builds is just clean, or it can be dirty. It can be anything. The way he built it is just a phenomenal
machine.
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around the fact that you totally, completely, you built a guitar.
And didn't know what I was doing. And I tell you, I read quite a bit, studied, and you know, measured instrument. We actually went to a guitar store that sold Nationals. I took a bunch of measurements and tried my best to copy the thing. Lakota playing left-handed. Left-hand instruments are more scarce than right-hand instruments. You can find right-hand guitars all the time, but as far as the National guitars, they were not producing a left-hand cutaway resonator at the time, so we made one, and it works great. It's just too heavy. But it's great art. It's a great piece of art. A lot of people say, well, why don't you sell it? I said, it's because it's his, and he digs dragging it out, playing it once in a while.
Right.
The sound on the boom that comes out of that guitar, and I'm thinking about when you were performing today, especially right. In Georgia Rag.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah. That's. I love that song. So Georgia Rag is a tune by Blind Willie McTell. I heard it actually on Pandora from a guy named Guy Davis. Another monster, by the way. I keep referring to people as monsters. Not being, you know, derogatory comment or anything. Just, I mean, all around. Singing, playing, that playing style. Because it is difficult. It's a very intricate style of playing. And, you know, it's not just singer-songwriter, you know, with a guitar pick up there strumming. Not that that's bad, because I love singer-songwriter, but just that style of playing is very intricate. But I learned the song from kind of both of the people. I heard it and I really fell in love with the song. It just grooves, you know, it has just bottom to it. And I played that song at the performance on Saturday as well. Great tune.
Trying to drive those blues away. Doing that rag, baby, that Georgia rag. Out in the alley and in the streets, all the boys and girls to me. Doing that rag, baby, that Georgia rag. Sting me like a bumblebee. Shake me like a leaf on a tree. Wild rag, crazy rag. Doing the Georgia rag. Yeah, one more time. Amazing Grace.
how sweet, sweet the sound that saved, hey, wretch, yes, like me. Yes, I once was lost, yeah, but now, yes, I found, was blind, yeah, but now, yes, I
also recognized your Amazing Grace.
Yes, Amazing Grace, that's also another one.
Again, pulling different influences from North Carolina.
Right.
How would you define, I guess, if somebody had never heard it before, how would you describe that?
I heard his voice, I felt his hand.
I would kind of explain that that style is more of like syncopated percussion style, bassy, grooving music. It's really, it's its own.
It's almost. It's kind of, it's, well, of course, it's
difficult
to explain. It's a gospel tune, but it's a bluesy gospel tune, touching on spiritual gospel tune. But it's got a lot of rhythm and blues in it, too. So it's kind of a morph of a few genres.
And I think that's what I really try to focus on my style and what I do in trying to incorporate, pulling different things from all of what I hear and put it together and try to morph it in one and make it my own. And that's what I do with all of the songs that I do. And I think that's a super important piece.
It's kind of tough to play like Reverend Gary Davis or play like, not that you don't want to, because they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
But, you know, taking what you hear from these different people and trying to do your best with it and add your own to it and make it your own. So if you can do that, that's great.
Well, gentlemen, I loved listening to you perform.
Thank you.
The history behind the guitar, and I love that you're mixing different genres of music and bringing it together. Mm-hmm. And also, I know that you're bringing in some of that Native influence and kind of crossing that with a little bit of that gospel touch and then hitting it with that ragtime.
And that's who we are, and I feel that that's what I do, that's what I love. It's a passion of mine.
Yeah, I dig that. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you all for having us today. It's an honor and pleasure to be here.
Oh, no, the honor is all ours, and I'm excited for our audience to find you also online.
Right, absolutely. LakotaJohn.com. I'm also on Instagram, Lakota_John. Facebook, same name, Lakota John. And you can just Google that. Also have an album coming out late fall, early winter. It's entitled The Winds of Time. And I'm super stoked about this project coming up. And actually, the Georgia Rag is on this coming in tune. So, yeah.
So there's two current albums. One of them has slipped out of production, which Lakota says, ah, man, that was when I was 11. So, but, you know, it's marking time, you know, period through time. And then we have a family CD, Lakota, John, and Ken. And you can find that also on LakotaJohn.com. If you like what you hear today, some of these tunes are on that as well.
And The Winds of Time, this next project coming out, will be on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, I think, Amazon Music, pretty much everywhere.
Was blind, yeah, but now... Yes, I see. Was blind, yeah, but now, yes, I see. Was blind, Lord, but now, yes, I see.
That was Sahar Kajanori in conversation with Lakota John and Sweet Papa John. More at LakotaJohn.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Lakota John and Sweet Papa John. Thanks also to Ryan Lilliengren, Director of Communications for the Diocese of Orange. Thanks also to Clay Walker. At FNX, thanks to Frank Blanquette and Sahar Kajanori. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Ben Perper, Mike Pesavento, and Izzy Gordon. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts. Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.